You're not too angry over any kind of football games yesterday that you can't hear the message this morning, but I won't say any more about that because I have friends in here and I want to remain friends with you guys. And so this morning we're going to be wrapping up our series that we've been in called Blank Space, and we've been in this for about 4 or 5 weeks now that we've just been talking about creating margin in our life, making room for God to move. And we've talked about our schedules, we've talked about time, we've talked about our finances, we've talked in ways of just getting the clutter out of our soul. And so today we're going to wrap this up this morning, and we're going to go to Mark chapter 5, so you can go ahead and start turning to Mark chapter 5, and we'll get there in just a second. Now, usually I come with a question, and I come with a question again this morning. If I ask you to name the most sacred space or sacred place on this property and at this church, what would you say? What would you say the most sacred place is on this property or at this church? Maybe you would say it's the sanctuary. Maybe you would say it's the space down here at the altar where we pray and just ask God to do amazing things. Maybe some of you might say that it's maybe the prayer room back there, and some of you are like, hey, we have a prayer room, you know? So maybe it's a prayer room. Maybe you would say, hey, it's a small group space because that's where we're really doing life together and having conversations. I would tell you this, if I was answering this question, this is what I would say. I'd say probably the most sacred spaces that we have at this church that I have seen are going to be places like the hallway, places like the parking lot, places like back here in the middle of this field where you think there's not anything out there except for grass. Those are the places that I would say, and the reason that I would say that is this, is because that's the places I think I've had some of the most sacred and profound conversations. Because that's where I have had a chance to really talk to people, and they've stopped me, and I've had maybe a few moments, and they've had a chance to just share with me what's on their heart or maybe what's going on in their life. And I have probably prayed for more people in hallways and parking lots and grassy knolls than I have right here in the sanctuary. It probably runs neck and neck with that. And so that's why I would say that. And, anytime that we find margin in our relationships, we're going to find something sacred. And that's what I want us to talk about this morning, is finding, creating margin, finding margin in our relationships and what that means for us creating space and creating places for God to move. See, sacred isn't about a space, and although I want to talk to you about sacred space, it isn't just about buildings and sheetrock and concrete and, you know, physical places. That's not what sacred is about. It's about where God's presence shows up and we begin to make space for each other. That's what really sacred space means. And so I want us to go to Mark chapter 5. Mark chapter 5, this is a story I love coming back to over and over, and A few months ago, we looked at this story and talked about the story. And really only we'll talk about kind of the first part of this is what I want to focus on. But let's go to Mark chapter 5. We're going to start in verse 21. Mark chapter 5, beginning in verse 21. It says, "And when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. And then came to one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus, and by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, 'My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live.' And he went with him, and a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. And there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years, and she had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had, and was no better, but rather grew worse. And she had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, 'If I touch even his garments or the fringe of his garments, I will be made well.' And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out of him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, 'Who touched my garments?' And his disciples said to him, 'You see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, "Who touched me?" And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, 'Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace.' And he healed and be healed of your disease. Verse 35. And while he was still speaking, there came from the ruler's house some of those who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." Now I'm going to stop right there, and I'm going to give you the spoiler of the rest of that story. Surprise, the little girl gets healed. She is raised from the dead, okay? That's really something. That's like a very Jesus thing to do, wouldn't you say, right? And that's not really what I want to focus on. That is amazing, and we've talked about that before. But what I want to focus on is what happened before that. And I want you to see that at the beginning when we started reading this, that you have a dad who comes to Jesus and he says, "Listen, my little girl, she is sick and she is dying. And I don't know where else to turn. I don't know what else to do. I believe that you are the answer to what is our problem. I believe that you are the answer to what's going on here." And so Jesus, he says, "Yeah, hey, let's go to your house," which I think is great, right? What does Jesus do? I don't know what Jesus had on his schedule that day. I don't know what Jesus had planned to do. Maybe Jesus had four or five other places he wanted to go. Maybe Jesus had a bunch of other things that he wanted to do. Maybe he had a schedule that he had to keep. And you know, Matthew or Simon Peter's over there, "Hey, we're on the clock, right? We got to go, Jesus, come on, snappy snap, let's go," right? Do you have people in your life like that? No, okay. Some of you might need that, okay? All right? But Jesus, I don't know what that was like. But what I do know is that whatever was going on, Jesus looked at this man and he said, "Yes, I'll stop and I'll what I'm doing and where I'm going, and I'll go to your house." And it's on this journey, it's in the middle of this journey to his house that Jesus stops again. And I don't know if you've ever had a day like this. Have you ever had a day like that where you've got things to do and it's just like you keep getting interrupted? Right? Yes. I think most of us have. We've had days like this where we just keep getting interrupted. Things, people are calling, people are texting, right? Maybe somebody's coming in the door, maybe somebody's knocking. You know, what is this? Maybe it's your Amazon packages that you probably don't need to even be ordering, right? Maybe it's somebody coming by to drop some. I don't know. We've all had times like this where we've been interrupted over and over and over again. I think we're kind of seeing, how does Jesus deal with that? Because Jesus had his own interruptions. Jesus had these moments where I know he had things to do. And I can sure probably feel for this dad, right? Can you imagine what's going through his mind? "Hey, Jesus, we got to go. Not only has Jesus got Matthew and Simon Peter saying, "Hey, snappy snap, we got to go, Jesus," right? Now this dad is, hey, come on, Jesus, we don't have time, let's go. We don't need to walk, we need to run, right? And if we could get some horses, I would ride horses to my house, right? That's how desperate this dad is to get Jesus to where he needs to go. And can you imagine how frustrating it is for this dad when this woman comes up behind Jesus and grabs hold of the fringe of his garment, right? And he stops. No, Jesus, don't stop. Jesus, don't, please don't stop. We don't have time for this, right? But Jesus, he understands. He knows time, right? He is the creator of time. He holds time together, right? And I think he says, I have all the time in the world. I have all the time in the universe. He lives by a different calendar and by a different clock. And so Jesus, he does stop. Not only did he stop for this father, he stops for this woman who was fearful about being called out. And I love what he does. I love in that moment that he stops for her and says, wait, somebody touched me. What are you talking about? Somebody, everybody's touching you, right? You're in a crowd of people. Everybody's pressing up against you. Jesus, what are you talking about? It's like, hey, somebody touched me. It was different. It was power went out of me. And he turns around and he sees this woman, and she's, if you can imagine, she's trembling. She's fearful, right? She has been on the periphery of society for a long time. She's been out on the edges. Because of her disease, it has kind of pushed her to the corners, and it has pushed her to the shadows, and she has been one of these people that nobody sees anymore until this moment. Until this moment where Jesus sees her. Where Jesus, he stops, and he sees her, and he engages her, right? And it's just like, this dad, I'm sure, is just frustrated. But Jesus is doing the most godlike thing in this moment. He's stopping for someone who has hardly ever been seen, and he's giving her time. He's giving her this moment that is precious. And it's in this moment that he changes her life. But this dad, he's like, this delay is going to cost us. And you see the story, part of the story that we read, that somebody else comes in and says, hey, don't trouble Jesus anymore. Don't mess with Jesus anymore because your daughter has died, right? And sometimes we can think, God, what are you doing? And sometimes it seems like love delayed, you know, denies the miracle, but that's not what we see here. Actually, knowing the end of the story, love delayed did not deny the miracle. Just because it wasn't on this dad's timetable, on this dad's clock, or on this dad's schedule, doesn't mean that Jesus didn't have a miracle for him. Actually, he had a greater miracle for him. Not just a healing, but a resurrection, right? A coming to life, which is really a picture of every one of us, of what Jesus wants to do for us. He doesn't want just to heal our hurts and our pains. Jesus wants to bring us back to life. And that's what we see in the story. And so this delay doesn't deny the miracle. And I guess the question that we'd have to ask is this: what if the most important moments in your life are often the ones you're trying to avoid? What if the most important moments in your life are the ones that you're trying to avoid? And this man, at this time, he's trying to avoid what happens in this story. Jesus, you've got to come. You've got to come right now. And they don't get there in time. At least not in time that this father had in his head and the clock that he had in his head. But it's in that moment that I think he misses that what God wants to do, not only for him, but his entire family. Not only what God wants to do for this woman, but this entire, all the people that are seeing these two amazing miracles that Jesus is doing and is about to do, right? And sometimes we're like this. There may be things in our life that we're trying to avoid, but that might be the very moment and the very place where Jesus wants to step into it and say, hey, this is your miracle moment. This is your miracle time. This is where I'm stepping in to create something beautiful in your life. And so are you going to give me the space to do that, right? Maybe the next question I can ask you is this, when were you the interruption, right? Not when have you been interrupted, But when were you the interruption, right? See, sometimes we can put ourselves, and we're telling these stories, right? We're talking about these stories of Jesus. What are we doing? We're trying to put ourselves in the story. Who are we, right? And I can feel this father's heartbeat racing, right? Come on, Jesus. And I see myself so much in that dad. And hey, I'm on the clock. We got to go. Come on. And then when Jesus stops, it's just like, I can imagine myself. But I think sometimes I have to imagine myself on the other side. That there have been times that I have been the interruption. There have been the times that I have been like the woman who just needed to reach out and touch Jesus. And you know what? There are times that you've been that too. That you've not just been interrupted, you have been the interruption. You have been the one that Jesus stopped for. You've been the one that that Jesus stopped and begins to look and begins to see who you are. So when was that? When was the last time someone truly stopped for you? Right? When was the last time that someone truly just stopped what they were doing, and when you needed help, they helped you? Maybe you can ask yourself this question. When was the last time that you truly stopped and helped someone else? When was the last time you allowed someone to interrupt you? Because a lot of times what we'll do is we have all these things on our devices, right? This do not disturb. Do not disturb me. We actually have these signs on our doors. Do not disturb me, okay? Or we just shut our doors, right? And these are times it's like, hey, I can't be bothered right now. I can't be interrupted right now. And I get it. I understand that. I really do. I have this happen all the time, right? There are times I use this on my devices. I do not disturb. There are times, most of the time, my door is open. But then there are times where I feel like I'm crunched for time, and I will shut my door. And that's kind of the signal to everybody in the office, hey, he is busy right now. He's on a phone call right now. He can't be bothered. I get that. I understand that. But I also understand this, that there are times that I've needed people to stop for me. And there are times that people need you stop for them and do exactly what Jesus modeled here. See, this is what I think I've seen. Most of us, we're starving for the very thing that we're too busy to give. That someone will stop and see and stay present with us. That's what I think I've seen. I think that's what we're starving for. We're starving for people to stop and actually see us. Right? How many times you go through your day and you're just going so fast and you just miss things, right? Or you miss people. Man, I totally missed you. I didn't even see you there, right? All right, I've had that happen. But these are the things that we want. There have been times where I have been that person that has been passed over and missed and is like, man, they didn't even stop and say hey. And it kind of puts me out or puts me off, and it's like, man, you know what? They don't have time for me. But I have to ask the same question about myself. When have I done that to somebody else? When have I been so busy that I did not have space in my schedule or space, for what I was doing that I could not stop? So what are the reasons? Why do we not stop? It's not because we're bad people, right? Maybe you are. I don't know. I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt. You're here this morning in church, so I'm going to say, hey, you might be a pretty good person because you showed up to actually do this, right? So I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt, right? But why don't we stop? I think there's a couple of different reasons why we don't stop. The first reason is this, is that we're emotionally overdrawn. We're emotionally overdrawn, right? We don't have anything else to give. Sometimes we wake up and we're already behind. Anybody ever felt like that? Right? Come on, I'm already behind. Your phone is buzzing with notifications and ringing with emails and text messages, and you're trying to think ahead to what needs to get done next, and all your energy is being put into all these other places, and you're trying to solve problems, right? Your brain is constantly running, and this is why you wake up in the middle of the night and your brain starts churning. Hey, it's time to start solving problems. You're like, no, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Go back to sleep. Anybody? Or is that just me? Okay. Could be just me. And so you're running on fumes by the time you get home, and there's not much else to give, right? That's because we're emotionally overdrawn. We give, and there's nothing else left to give sometimes when we really get to the place where we need to give. And and I'm gonna tell you this. This is very convicting for me. I don't stand here today and say, "Dude, I have perfected this. You losers need to get on board." Right? That's not what's happening here. This is super convicting. And actually, there've been when I was studying through this, I'm just like, God, I don't want to talk about this because this hits too hard, too close to home. Because I've been there. I do this. I'm guilty. Right? But we're all guilty. And I think that's why we have to look at this, and that's why we have to ask these questions, and that's why we have to ask, hey, why don't we stop? Why are we so all over the place? For one thing, we're emotionally overdrawn, right? Ephesians chapter 4, this is what it says. He says, therefore, Paul's writing to the Ephesian church, I therefore, a prisoner of the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of your calling to which you have been called. With all humility and gentleness, and with what? Patience. Oh, gosh. Oh, man, how many of you could use a little bit more patience, right? You know, don't pray for it. I've always been told that if you pray for it, God knows how to teach you patience, right? You'll get caught by every train. You'll get caught by every red light. It's like, God, what are you doing? It's like, I'm teaching you patience. You need to slow down, right? And so we need this. He says, walk in a manner worthy of your calling. What is the manner worthy of our calling? The calling that we've all received to live in such a way where we walk with humility and we walk with gentleness and we have patience and what? Bearing with one another in love. Bearing with one another in love. And see, patience requires emotional space that sometimes we don't have. And gentleness needs margin that sometimes you've already spent, right? And that's just the reality of it. I don't have patience and I don't have gentleness because all that went out the window about 3 hours ago, right? It went out the window with the phone call that I just got off of. It went out the window with that ride from Savannah to Richmond Hill. It went out the window just that quick, right? And that might be, you know, because we're just overdrawn emotionally. The second thing I think what happens is this, is we've lost the art of presence, of practicing presence, right? And I'm not talking about presence like you give at like Christmas, right? I'm talking about the fact of just being present in that moment. The fact of just being there. I think we've lost that. I don't know that we do that really well in our society anymore. Why? Because we're multitaskers. How many of you are multitaskers? And some of you won't admit to it. Maybe you say, I'm not good at it, so I'm not raising my hand. I'm just saying you try, okay? You try to multitask because you're texting and you're watching something, you're listening, right? And you're doing all these things, and it's in that moment, like, you're just, or maybe you're sitting on the couch, right? And I've been guilty of this, where me and Rain's been sitting on the couch, and TV's on, and I'm scrolling through something, and she's talking about something, and, huh? Yes, yes, yes. Exactly what you said, right? And I have no clue what she said, but I'm just kind of looking there, and I've got that look on my face like, please don't ask me what you just said, right? It's like we've lost that art of being present. We don't practice that very well anymore. And I'm guilty, just as guilty as you. And James 1:19, this is what it says, know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear and slow to speak, and slow to anger, right? But so many times we get this so messed up where we're slow to hear, we're quick to speak, and we're quick to get angry. Anybody? Oh, I know, this is convicting. I'm sorry, guys. I'm not really sorry because you need it as much as I do. See, when we live without relational margin, we end up drained, divided, and disconnected. That's what happens. We end up with just nothing left to give. So if we took our cues from Jesus this morning, what would that look like? What would it look like? And the truth is that Jesus stopped for you, right? How many of you know Jesus stopped for you? Jesus stopped for you. Jesus created space in his own heart for our brokenness, our shame, our sin. He stopped what he was doing, and he came to this earth and allowed himself to be nailed to a cross for us. And so he created space for us. And so, you know, what happens when we make space for people, that becomes sacred. It means this. It means conflicts can become conversations. It means that loneliness can become belonging. That's what that means. That's what that looks like. That, you know what, our conversations, our conflicts don't have to become disagreements. Sometimes that's what it looks like is disagreements become disasters. They just devolve, right? But what if our conflicts became more conversational instead of disasters because we're bypassing each other and now we're creating space for each other and now we can actually have a conversation to understand what's going on in somebody else's heart and mind, right? That takes time and that takes space. It takes patience and gentleness. And all these things sometimes we struggle with. All these things sometimes I struggle with. This is what I know. Jesus saw interruptions as invitations. Right? What do you see? Jesus saw interruptions as invitations. What do you see? When you're interrupted, what do you see? Man, you're cutting into my time. Man, you're cutting into my schedule. Man, you're... Or do you see something else? And I know you say, Pastor Ryan, I can't be everywhere. I totally get this. I'm going to ask somebody to come play. But this is how I try to do it around here at the church. Sunday mornings, I try to talk to a lot of people, right? There's a lot of people that sometimes want to talk to me, and I want to pray with them. And sometimes I cannot give 30 minutes on a Sunday morning, right? It's almost like Sundays become like triage, if you think about it like that. And I'm trying to process in my head, what is something that is this something I need to deal with right now? Is this something that, man, this is super just hard, and this needs my time? Is this something that, you know what, this is tough, but, man, I can make that phone call after church, right? Or I can deal with this, you know, in about 2 hours. Or maybe it's, hey, this is a need, but, hey, we need to set up a time where we can talk about this at length in the office. And sometimes that's what I'm doing. I'm just trying to figure out, I want to do well with who God places in front of me. I really do. And it's not, I really do think that we're people that want to create space. Sometimes we're just trying to figure out what that looks like. And we're trying to do it with wisdom. And we're trying to do it with humility. And we're trying to do it just with patience. And once again, there's only so much to go around. I want you to stand with me this morning. So, how would your week look different if you just tried to create more sacred space for the interruptions of the week? How would your week look different if you just tried to create more relational margin? What would that look like this week? Who would that need to be for, right? Who do you need to create space for in your life? What is their name? Maybe most of us, it's somebody that lives in our house, if we're being honest. Because a lot of times, the people that are closest to us are the ones that get probably the least in our house. So, who is that need you need to create space for? Maybe this morning, the one that you need to create space for, relationship that I need to create space for is the one that starts with Jesus. So I'm asking you about your heart. And I think that's actually the first place to start when we're talking about relational margin is, what does that relationship look like between you and Jesus? Have you just been playing a game or playing church or playing religion? Is it really time to stop what you're doing and look at this relationship that he's inviting you to and say, I can't play that game anymore. I can't play that game anymore. I can't just play the religious game where maybe I show up to church, I sing some songs, I hug a neck, and then I walk out, but there's nothing going on in my heart with Jesus. So right now, you got that invitation Jesus gives to you to stop, because he stopped for you and he sees you right now and he invites you to come close. So Lord, that's what we do. We stop right now. Lord, we thank you. overlooked in a lot of ways in our homes, in our families, in our marriages, and at our workplaces, Lord. And God, you know that. The great thing is you don't overlook us. You see us. Not interruptions, but they're an invitation for us to stop and